Hi, everybody. Thank you so much for joining me on this week's Tell Us How to Make It Better podcast. If a wildfire was headed towards your house, are you prepared? Do you know how your house was built to possibly survive the fire? Have you done anything special to fix it up to make it more likely to survive? Do you have an evacuation plan if you had to get out in a hurry? Well, my guest today is Bobby Milstein. He's a wildfire mitigation expert. Bobby was featured in my documentary film, The Last House Standing, and we were talking about in the film the Woolsey Fire that happened in Malibu, California, back in 2018. Bobby was instrumental in helping a lot of those houses survive. So if you answered no to any of the questions about how ready you are for a wildfire, you need to hear what Bobby has to say. I'm George Siegel, and this is the Tell Us How to Make It Better podcast. Your home is probably your biggest investment. And every week, we show you warning signs and solutions to help you protect it. Tell Us How to Make It Better is partnering with The Readiness Lab, the home for podcasts, webinars, and training in the field of emergency and disaster services. Bobby, thank you so much for joining me today.
Good to see you, George.
Yeah, it's great seeing you. You were a star in our film, The Last House Standing, with great information, all the work you did at Calamigos Ranch and all the houses that you save on a regular basis. So today I want to talk a little differently about what you do, just in terms of the average homeowner who buys a house and probably puts very little thought into fire. How do they need to be thinking?
I truly believe if you live in, it's called a WUI. So, it's a urban interface zone that is in the mountains, in the hills, where there's natural fuels that can burn. So unfortunately, a lot of people are really unaware of the danger of fires. In Malibu, for instance, the Woolsey Fire woke up a lot of people. So people that want to live in that kind of an area successfully need to think of wildfire. They need to be aware they live in a wildfire zone, and they need to take different measures to live in it successfully.
And one of the things we talked about in the film is the vegetation people put around their houses. You know, I love palm trees, and you looked at me like I was an idiot. What's that? You're just looking at me because most people look at me that way, but.
The factors are, you have home construction. So you have whatever your house is built out of. Some houses are very fire resistant. Other houses are made to catch embers and light on fire. So, and then you have the vegetation around the house, you have the natural vegetations, and you have the ornamental vegetations. So in Southern California, in the hills, our natural vegetations are highly flammable because Southern California is actually a desert, meaning all the natural fuels are highly drought resistant. And drought resistant fuels, a normal plant is two parts water, one part organic matter. Drought resistant plants really don't have a lot of water. They have resins instead, and the resins are highly flammable, and they promote fire. It's like fireworks going off watching a sumac catch on fire. You have ornamental vegetation like palm trees. Palm trees, when an ember lights a palm tree on fire, it's kind of similar to the movie Gremlins, but the gremlins exploding off the tree aren't cute little furry creatures. There are little fireballs that create more fires and light more things on fire. So the fire just continues to grow.
You know, I was thinking about you last year when we had a big storm here in Tampa, and we have power lines behind our house that the palm tree had been overgrown and the power line was arcing, and the tree, you could see that it was ready to catch on fire, and just by luck, it didn't. So the power company comes out 2 weeks later and they said, "You're lucky this thing didn't just blow up and potentially burn your house down." And I don't live in the wilderness. I live right in the middle of a city. So it can really happen anywhere.
Oh yeah, it can happen anywhere. The difference is where we live, there's a lot of other fuel to catch fire. So, you know, our biggest danger in really Southern California is in the mountains, the Santa Monica mountain range, is the Santa Ana winds. So the Santa Ana winds make fire a lot. I mean, you cannot really fight a wind-driven fire in, say, the Santa Monica Mountains. It's utterly impossible. The winds make those little embers, which are called fire brands. They can travel miles. meaning miles. So the fires just continue to spot and grow and grow and grow. So it's just impossible. Once it starts, where I live, it's burning until it hits the ocean. We call the ocean the Great Pacific Fire Break, is what we call it. So we know the Great Pacific Fire Break will always stop that fire from getting to Hawaii.
So as that fire is moving through, and I grew up in Pacific Palisades, and we had to worry about this every year. As the fire is moving through, some houses make it, some don't. Is it luck? Is it planning? Is it a combination of both?
It's a combination of both, you know. So there's half the homes burn from ember intrusion, meaning the fire doesn't have to be anywhere near the house. The fire could be a mile away. If you're unlucky enough to have an ember get inside an attic vent, your house is going to burn from the inside out. And you're not going to know it's on fire until it is really, really burning. And a home on fire is almost impossible to extinguish, especially when resources are stretched like they are in the big wildland fires. They just do not have the manpower. There's not enough boots on the ground, not enough infrastructure. So there's winners and losers. So some of it's dumb luck. A lot of it is actually home construction. And, there's the most important thing, even above what we do, doing our defense systems, is home hardening. So, for instance, home hardening is making your house less intrusive to an ember. So it's changing all the vents on your house. There's a number of companies that make ember-proof vents, meaning an ember just cannot enter your dwelling. There's construction architectural features like eaves on houses. Eaves are the extra part of the roof sticking out. Eaves can be very dangerous in some areas. It really all depends. What the eave does is not that an ember is going to light an eave on fire, but if something is on fire, if you have a big fuel source underneath burning, the heat of the fire is rising. So that actually starts fire by convection. It's almost like when you rub a stick together to make a fire out in the wilderness. The hot gases are rising thousands of degrees, and they're trapped. So they're just spiraling, looking to escape. They're just spiraling, 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 turning. And just the friction of that you can't even see is what will light the eave on fire.
Now, there's always different levels of disasters. So in Florida and along the Gulf Coast, we have Category 5 hurricanes that tend to wipe out a lot of things in their path. The same with tornadoes. Are there different types of fires? Because I know there was the Woolsey fire the year we made our film, and there was also the Paradise fire. And the Paradise fire, it looked like even if you had a plan, it looked like it might not have worked with the firestorm they had. So what's the difference in the types?
Well, the Paradise, it's really geography where you are, roads, the infrastructure there. I mean, what made the Paradise fire, super tragic, is you had those high winds, so people were evacuating. It was burning behind them. The firebrands were going over them, creating other fires in front of them, and they were trapped. And, being on the road, we tell people that are going to evacuate, they need to get out at the earliest possible minute. Everyone living in a wildfire area, the most important thing is a plan. Before anything else, it's a plan. It's knowing where you're going, what you're doing, what you're taking, and pulling the trigger, making it happen immediately. Not lollygagging around and debating, am I leaving, am I staying? But people that leave late, unfortunately, you might have a much higher probability of potentially perishing by not getting out when you should get out. So Paradise is very, it's unique. I think that area, I heard, was studied more than any other area, and everything went sideways. So people were on the road and they were trapped in their cars. There's nowhere to go. If you're on a small road and someone has an accident or a car breaks down in front of you, it's going to affect every single other person on that road. So I mean, what occurred up there is just a tragedy. I mean, just beyond belief, it's just a tragedy.
It was awful. Now, I steal a line of yours that you had in the film about nobody wakes up the day of a fire and makes their plan. You really have to plan for these things, but most people put that off. And then by the time they decide they need it, sometimes it's too late.
Well, some people by sheer luck, and it really is sheer luck, will stay and defend without the proper tools, without the proper equipment, without the proper training. But no, plan is by far the most important thing. And it's just like, the fire department, we're protected by LA County Fire, which is definitely one of the finest organizations on this planet. But like I said before, a wind-driven fire changes the game. So you're kind of helpless. I mean, you're really helpless. That fire, wind-driven fire, so the Woolsey fire was tremendous. It was red flag conditions, which red flag conditions are single digit humidity. So the weather affects what a fire will do. And it was Santa Ana winds, single digit humidity, red flag alert, and the area that lit had not burned in 30 years. So, you know, our fire front that came over the mountain was 14 miles wide. Can't fight a 14 mile wide fire front. I don't care who you are. They could have had the Navy, the Marines. You know, the LA County got a lot of flack for the commands and how they handled the fire. There was a lot of anger from residents. But, you know, really realistically looking at it, knowing, you know, we live in a beautiful, beautiful place. It's nature. And the roads, like Malibu, was not a planned community where you have, you know, egress and access and nice places to turn around. I mean, they're requiring 20-foot wide driveways. There's some many, many roads where I live that aren't even 20 feet wide. So, yeah, just incredibly, incredibly dangerous, especially for people that don't know the terrain. You could have all the fire training in the world. You'd be the best guy at it. But if you don't know the area, where the road goes, the hazards, the fuels, you know, you're putting yourself in danger. And that's, you know, it's the call they made. They, you know, their number one mission is protect lives, and not only the lives of the public, but the lives of the firefighters too. So that was their decision, was based on not wanting firefighters to perish. You know,
there's a lot of unhappy people that we talked to and saw that. They felt the fire department was standing around watching as their house burned. They heard them say, we're going to have to let that one go. We're going to have to do this. And to me, what that heightens even more is that's why you have to have the safest house you can, because you can't always count on somebody showing up and saving the day. You have to do what you can up front to try to make your house as safe as possible.
Yeah, I think a lot of people, I don't know if it's psychology that people don't want to think about fire. You know, I've been in this game a long time. We've been trying to help people out since 2005. It's sad, but it's almost comical in a way. Before we got into our sophisticated systems now, we would sell standalone systems. Sometimes we used to sell pumps on a dolly. I mean, literally, you tell someone, you know, a pump and the hose, the infrastructure, the gel, everything, you know, it'd be 15, 20 grand for the property. They'd be looking like all, you know, that's really expensive. I live in a real world. My jet ski costs more than that. That's like a toy. I mean, I trailers in Malibu are selling for up to $3 million, $4 million for a mobile home, you know? So you're sitting at a house, say it's a more or less expensive home in Malibu, $3 million house. There's $500,000 in cars sitting in the driveway. There's, you know, there are terrazzo floors. They're this, they're that, they're Gaggenau. Kitchen appliances, there are Trollson fridges, and people are just really, really unrealistic. It's to me, a lot of people spending money on fire stuff. You know, some people it's not a thought to them. Like, it just, I don't know if they just don't want to think about it because fire is so horrifying that if they don't think about it, they think it's never going to happen. They're just not really realistic. And, you know, to me, it's a shame because, you know, half the houses burn, like I said, from embers. So, like, we do not do systems on homes that haven't been hardened, you know? So hardening a home is the first step. Like, if someone's like, oh, I'm going to do that later, we would never do a system for that property. Never in a million years. You know, we try to set up our clients for success. So success is, like, you know, if you want to live there, if you want to commit, you have to commit. It's 100% thing. It's not a, oh, I'll do 50% of it, I'll do half of it. No, you do it all or you're just bullshit. You're just fooling yourself. You know?
I think most people aren't all in. You know, I've had a couple of guests recently. One makes a fire ladder that folds onto the side of your house. So it's a full ladder, but it's not visible unless you need it. And it's not that expensive. Yet when I was talking to the guy, he said people don't want to pay for that because they'd rather have the one that you just throw out in case of a fire, but they've never practiced with that. They never have any idea how it's going to work. So when push comes to shove, they're not necessarily ready to use it. And the other is a garage guy that finishes garages. And by the time people get to the garage, they don't want to spend any more money. And a lot of times they just throw everything out there. Yet the things that probably are the most important, fire seems like that would be number one. Maybe in Florida where it's hurricanes and flooding, but in a lot of parts of the country, people should really be accounting for this more.
I just think people, there's kind of a lack of accountability now in society, top to bottom. I mean, top to bottom. I don't know what's to blame for it. It's kind of crazy. We are, there's more education available now to the common person than any time in humanity, any time in the thousands of years people have been walking the planet. All this information is out there. I think now, through all the sophistication, I think man is the weakest they've ever been at any point of humanity. I think the people now are just weaker than half these people would not have survived 200 years ago. You know, I mean, 90% of the people living in this country, probably 95% of the people living in this country would have never been able to make it on the wagon trains from the East Coast to the West Coast, like never in a million years, you know? So it's kind of funny. You know, we classify people as like mountain men and villagers. So like Malibu, for instance, all right, that's like mountain man country. So like the mountain men came there and tamed the land and made it livable and everything. And then the villagers, yeah, that's a beautiful place to live. And the villagers move out there and then they start making rules and rules and more rules and more rules and more rules because they want it to be like they're like what they're accustomed to. And eventually the mountain men pack up and leave because they don't want a bunch of villagers telling them how to live their lives or what they can have on their, what they can do. And then you have all these villagers who just literally, I don't even know how they survive. You know, it's kind of crazy. I just think people are, you know, Malibu, for instance, has, there's a long tradition of old timers living there fighting fires. And when I first started my first company, Malibu Fire Supply, I really did it because I got tired of seeing my neighbors in surfboard shorts and hula shirts and flip flops standing on a roof with a garden hose, pissing out 3 gallons a minute of water. Like these people are not leaving. So why not equip them properly, give them the proper tools, the proper training, so they could be A, safe, B, successful, C, not be a problem for firefighters, not put firefighters' lives in danger. So it's interesting to see when the fires happen. Everyone wants to point the blame at somebody. I believe in accountability. And if you choose to live, I always say, we live in a fireplace. Learn to live in a fireplace. So no one made you live in a fireplace. You made a decision to move to the Santa Monica Mountains. You should be accountable for that decision. You can afford a house in the Santa Monica Mountains. Guess what? You can afford to harden that house. You can afford to mitigate the ornamental vegetation. But some people just have to have their palm trees. No, I'm not going to take down my palm trees. It's the silliest thing ever. I don't want to swear, but I call palm trees like asshole trees. And when I go up in one of the canyons and I look at homes, I'm just like, asshole, asshole, asshole. Like, you're just an asshole. Like, because it's not just you. Like, that tree is not only going to affect your house in a fire. If that tree catches on fire, the brands coming off of it are going to create many more fires that are going to run the way the wind's going. And they're basically going to shaft everyone living downwind of those trees. So to me, it's silly. You know, like, you want palm trees, move out to the desert. Have your palm trees.
Sure. Now, do you think that most people, so if I'm buying a house back in a canyon or in an area where it's back in the woods, there's some things that I probably need to think about when I'm looking at that. Is there more than one way out? What is the plan if there is a fire? Do I have a fire plan myself? How much of that do you think people just never even crosses their mind?
For people that have lived in Malibu a long time, they're very aware of fire. For there's, you know, Malibu has this big mystical name. So there's, you know, for everyone out there listening, Malibu is not what you think it is. All right. It's a lot of people think it's like the West Coast version of the Hamptons. Well, guess what? Nobody wakes up and has breakfast at the country club and then does a wardrobe change and goes to a little white party. And then it's like a hick town. It's like the people that moved out there years ago to get away from the city people. The old timers moved out there. I actually met so many people and seen so many interesting properties from what I do. I went to this one property and really far out in Malibu, beautiful piece of land this guy had. And he was actually the first principal of, it's called Roskamere Road Elementary School. It's where I went. It's up in Bel Air. So he was the very first principal of Roskamere. And I mean, it is miles away now in traffic, probably take you an hour and 20 minutes to get there in like heavy commuter traffic now. And I said to him, I said, wow, you drove in every day to Roskamere? Like, what made you move out here? And his answer was, it was the only place I could afford to live in all of Los Angeles, you know? So he moved out there, you know? The newer people moving out there now, a lot of them are moving to Malibu, this fictional place where it's just movie stars and $100 bills are blowing down the street from all the billionaires. And so it's kind of comedy. Like, if I was from anywhere else in the world and I came to Malibu, like, I love when I see a tourist and they ask me, where's Malibu? And it's like, Malibu is nothing. It's like 21 miles of coast, a long strip. There's a couple little malls that used to be unique. Now with development, they're just like generic any mall USA. There's like Sephora Malibu and all these Whole Foods Malibu and all these ridiculous stores you could find at any mall in the world now. It's very, very, very bizarre. So there's people that, you know, moved out there for nature, to surf, for the beaches, for the horses, to live amongst the beauty. And now there's people that are moving out there for the status, so they can say, oh, I have a home in Malibu. You know, it's like the stores are all lost leaders. The stores go in Malibu. I'm making money in Malibu. No one living in Malibu is going out shopping. Like, when you see someone dressed up in Malibu, you know one thing. They are not from Malibu. You get to dinner, see people in suits dressed up. The one thing for sure, 100%, they do not live in Malibu.
Well, I would say that I would argue though that the old timers to me are just as dangerous as the newbies, because I see that here in Florida. We have a bunch of people that move down here from other places where they don't have any experience with hurricanes, but the people that have been here for years just kind of laugh them off because we haven't been hit by one for so many years. So yeah. I think both sides have their problems. I think we need to shake everybody on both sides and wake them up, especially a lot of the old timers. Their house isn't insured for what it's worth. They have a lot of things in their house that probably they don't have insurance on. We sure saw that with people we talked to. So how do we get a wake-up call so both sides hear it?
I don't know. That's that whole accountability thing. I mean, you know, for home insurance, out here, home insurance is outrageous. State Farm just announced State Farm now. So AIG pulled out of California after the fires. Chubb, everyone started dropping people. We had clients that were insured for years with AIG having policies that were like $30,000 a year, which is still quite a bit of money, getting quotes of $250,000 a year, $300,000 a year. One of my clients called me panicked. If you can believe this, he got a quote of $700,000 a year for insurance on his house. $700,000 a year was the best quote his broker could get him. We ended up getting him insured. I mean, still outrageous, but I think he is saved now. I think it's his third year with the policy. We've saved him over $1.5 million on his insurance.
Can you name the company just so we can really hate them? Who would charge that much?
I don't know who gave the $700,000 quote. It's really just outrageous. There's, I have another friend, childhood friend, has a beautiful house he's lived in for years. He was always insured by AIG. They dropped him. He was getting quotes of $250,000, $300,000 a year. He didn't have a mortgage on his house. His house had made it through a fire. The house, he says, what do I do? He says, I want to self-insure. So in California, we have a thing called the California Fair Plan. So the California Fair Plan, it's mandated by the state. It's basically, if you can't get insurance from anyone else, you get Fair Plan coverage. After the Woolsey, it got increased. So I believe you could get about $3.5 million of coverage with the California Fair Plan. But, you know, it's horrifying. Most of my clients are self-made people. They're very aware. They can do basic math. So they understand, no, there's not enough firefighters. They're not putting their safety in the hands of anyone other than themselves. And they do the research and they look and they invest and they'll do the modifications and they'll spend the money. I mean, my friend, Adnan's house, he's a businessman. He's looking at what the insurance company wants. He's like, that's debt service on a $4 million home. Like, I'd rather buy a home for my daughter than give the money to some insurance company. I mean, that's crazy, crazy money.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And as we learned from the mayor of Malibu, the former mayor, Zuma Jay, not having a mortgage isn't necessarily a good thing if you have an insurance claim, because then they don't have any reason to pay attention to you have to fight a bank.
Oh, no, because like a little guy like Jay's amazing. I've known Jay for years. I love Jay. He battled the fire and hurt himself. And now we're going on 5 years after the Woolsey fire. And he's still battling it every day, because now instead of battling the flames, which to me is an easier thing to battle than a bunch of paper pushers some insurance company is paying. And the crazy thing is, you've enabled them to be able to fight you by paying their ridiculous premiums in the first place. So the entire thing's insane. So yeah, I do think people with mortgages, having the bank behind them, banks have our money too to pay for their attorneys. So, you know, the whole legal game, it's not about right and wrong anymore. It's about resources. And whoever has the most resources wins in a legal battle, basically. Right and wrong doesn't factor in the equation at all. You know, you can afford to throw more paper, you're probably going to come out on top, you know, and get things your way. So it's really, really unfortunate.
Now, you guys have had a lot of rain this year, so that doesn't make it look like by the time we get through summer into fall, probably going to be very ripe for some major fires out there. Where do you think the areas that are most vulnerable are?
For sure, regardless of the weather, Eastern Malibu is by far. So Eastern Malibu is Topanga Canyon, some people may know of. The last big fire to roar through there was in the early like 90s. So it's the same scenario that set up the Woolsey with that 30 years of fuel growth. We're 30 years of fuel growth there. So it's horrifying. Topanga is an amazing little mountain community, really, really old school. There's one road that goes through the entire canyon. So there's only one road to get in and out. The winds come from the valley side. So really the only way out is going to the ocean. But again, being in a car, trying to evacuate, these fires, the Santa Ana winds, move tremendously fast. So, I mean, it's possible to light on the valley side and make it to the ocean in under 2 hours. You know, 2 hours isn't really a lot of time. I don't know how many thousands of residents live up there, but it's horrifying. So it's 30 years of fuel growth. Again, we're not a planned community in the mountains here. So a lot of the homes were built years ago. There's a lot of just wood framed, wood decks sticking out of the hill. I mean, homes that are not hardened. There's homes that you couldn't harden. So it's really going to be sad when Topanga lights again. So when I say Eastern Malibu, when Topanga lights, just from where the Santa Ana winds come from and our topography and geography, it's going to make it to the eastern end of Malibu. So my clients in Big Rock, Big Rock's a big worry of mine, Las Flores Canyon, Rambla Pacifica. So the last fire that lit up in Topanga, the last time it happened, it burned hundreds and hundreds of homes in Eastern Malibu. I mean, just hundreds. So it's basically the same scenario as the Woolsey on the other side of town.
Do you encourage all people to leave when they have to leave? Or if you set them up with your system, do some of them stay because they feel safer? What's the, when you have somebody in a house that you've set up to be safer, how safe are they?
Well, pretty much we still set up, you know, standalone systems that are manned where you'd actually have to manually start the pump and apply products of gel, retardant and stuff. But mainly what we're doing now is our total autonomous systems. So our autonomous systems, there's no human involvement needed. So we really encourage people that have those to leave, you know. The unfortunate thing that happened in Malibu is the mindset people have because of the commands of LA County Fire. A lot of them are looking at it like, well, the people that stayed saved their homes and the people that left lost their homes. So unfortunately, the next big fire coming through, it's kind of scary, but there's a lot of people planning on staying that have no business of staying. And a lot of them aren't taking it seriously. And, you know, it's like Pennywise pound foolish. I always say people step over dollars to pick up pennies. So it's like, you know, we've run across people all the time. I used to distribute this one gel that was amazing. The gel, if you sprayed your house with it, you could not burn the house with welding torches. You just could not burn it. But it takes a very specific, a real deal fire pump in order to apply it. The pressures, the water flow need it. So like a little Honda pump you'd buy at Home Depot, it's not a fire pump. So we run across people all the time that, you know, they want to buy the product. They want to buy the gel. And I said, what kind of pump do you have? Oh, I got this fire pump, you know. I said, well, what kind of fire pump is it? Oh, it's a Honda fire pump. Well, Honda makes engines. Honda doesn't really make fire pumps. So there are fire pumps with Honda engines on them, but like Honda does make a pump. It's not a fire pump. It's a great little pump for moving water. It is not firefighting pressures, not the quality. It's a bullshit pump to me. And you know, they'll dance around it. They'll tell me, oh yeah, you should feel this thing. Well, yeah, a normal person that's only held a garden hose putting out 30 pounds of pressure, yeah, any pump in their hand moving some real water feels like it's something amazing. But if you've actually used a pump and needed to use a pump in a fire, it's not a fire pump. It's not adequate. So, yeah, my when they can't remember how much it is, how, you know, what kind of pump it is, my final question to determine if it's a real pump is, I say, do you remember how much you paid for that pump? And they'll be like, oh, yeah, it was like $500. I'm like, you don't have a fire pump, you know? And so, yeah, it's really sad. You know, we do have, you know, people call me and they want to buy adapters or hose or nozzles. And I have this pump discussion with them. And I will not equip someone that's not going to do it right. I have no interest at all. I'm not about the sale. I can give a shit. You know, this isn't all about money to me. It's about doing the right thing. So I'm not going to enable someone to put themselves in danger to make a few dollars off a fitting or a hose or a nozzle. This is it's not what my company is all about. You know, we set up our clients for success. You know, I like, you know, it's like the Woolsey fire. You went to Calamigos Ranch. Saving the ranch was one thing. You know, it's pretty amazing. But really what we saved there, other than the buildings, we saved 540 jobs. So 540 families can pay their bills and feed their kids and pay for school and pay, make their car payments or mortgage payments, you know. So it's really unfortunate. There's a lot of people fooling themselves. They're just fooling themselves. So the next fire, to me, it's really horrifying. You do have some people and some neighborhoods taking it really seriously, you know, and they're doing a great job. There's Malibu West, as the, you know, they have their brigade. There's the Point Doom Bombers, the Point Doom Brigade, which I'm heavily involved in. They actually have their own engine, multiple pumps. There's 30 guys now with full PPEs. Their regular training sessions. There's the Big Rock. There's these neighborhoods. So, but I really encourage all of them to really take it seriously. And again, it's like penny wise, pound foolish, you know. And we see the same things. Everyone has these little red plastic like nozzles. There's a lot of those out there. People, oh yeah, I got my fire hose and my nozzle. And you look at that little red nozzle and you're like, ugh, you know. And pretty much everyone I know that had one of those in the Woolsey fire told me the same thing. I dropped my hose and that nozzle just shattered, you know.
Yeah. And that's the work you did at Calamigos Ranch was so impressive. And what would be the price range from the least expensive, obviously, to the most expensive that a homeowner could go through to try to save their house?
That's kind of a hard one because every home is a little bit different on what it needs. A manual, something that you need to man, a standalone system for the pump, the infrastructure, the product, meaning like a gel or a water enhancer to spray on, some safety gear, because even if you're leaving, if you're doing anything, you need to have safety gear, you know. Probably looking at between $15,000, $20,000 on the low end. Our smaller standalone systems, the autonomous systems, which self-activate, self-maintain to protect properties, entry level on those is probably mid $60,000 range. Our bigger estate series pumps, those systems starting at $150 or so. It's all expensive. It's like, you know, I mean, people say, what do you do? It's like our pumps we build, they're like, you know, it's like an exotic car. But, you know, that exotic car where I live, the homes we protect, that could be one painting on a wall in someone's house. That could be, you know, you look at what cars cost nowadays. I mean, a Jeep. Jeeps are like $75,000, $80,000. You know, a one-ton Ford truck. I have a one-ton Ford. If I want to replace my F-350 right now with the leather interior and all the ads, it's $120,000 for a car.
So what's the poor man's way then of doing it? So obviously for the person who can't afford it, and I get it. If you live in a house that's a $10 million house, that should be a no-brainer. Yeah. But if I live in a $300,000, well, I'm probably not living in Malibu, but somewhere else in the country, let's walk through two or three things that somebody can do to make their house safer.
Okay, well, that's all about home hardening. So that's like less expensive than what I do. So that is like where I live. The reason those systems cost what they cost, people here don't want to clear. They live here for the nature. So you look at my clients and say, oh, you got to remove every tree within 200 feet of the house. They're looking at you like, you're fucking nuts. If I want to live in the desert, I live in a desert with no trees. You know, I live here. So, you know, that's why, I mean, you look at the ranch. We were able to move enough water. We saved, I mean, almost every tree on that property. Those, you know, that's fifth generation of of owner now at the ranch. So no, if you want to protect a house, it's hardening. So, I mean, it's ember. So, you know, vents, if you don't want to spend the money on like an embers out or a brand guard vent or a Vulcan vent, you get the tightest mesh you can. You make your house just totally ember proof, meaning good seals on the doors, good seals on the windows. You can make heavy wood shutters. You can make external plywood, like in a hurricane. If you did the same kind of thing in a wildfire, heat can break a window. So, you know, double pane windows are better than single pane windows. Take a 1-inch piece of marine grade ply and screw it over that window. That window's not going to break. You have elevated decks. We really encourage people to not have elevated decks or to block it off. You could go to Home Depot and get hardy board that they use to put behind tile, and hardy board, you know, make your house impervious to embers. You know, don't put a sisal doormat on a wooden deck in front of a wooden door, because it could catch an ember, and, you know, that ember is going to sit there and just simmer and burn and burn and burn. If the wind hits it right, you know, most of these homes actually burn hours after the firestorm comes through. Hours. So it's really embers laying around festering, 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 festering. You have a garage, no cardboard boxes on the ground. You have all those old Christmas decorations and your old family photos, go to Home Depot, buy some cheap racks. So if an ember does get into your garage, it burns out on the concrete. It's not wedged against a box in the corner somewhere festering for hours. So it's hardening. So, you know, if you live like that, yeah, you do have to mitigate your landscaping. You do need to remove those trees near your house. The first 5 feet around your house is really make or break. So the first 5 feet out from any wall is really the most important thing in your house. But the further you can clear those fuels, the safer you are. So, you know, if you really want to live and you can't afford to do a system or get into any of the suppression technologies, then it really is about home hardening. So homes like that, yeah, you should box in your eaves or stucco in your eaves or hardy board in your eaves so you don't have raw wood leading to your attic, your roof line, exposed. So,
well, we hope people pay attention to that. But another line from our film was, hope is not a strategy.
No, hope is not a strategy at all. You know, well, they say, you know, I mean, you know, it's like plan to succeed. No plan. You're going to fail. You don't have a plan. You're going to fail. You know, so a lot of people, sheer luck, you know, sheer luck. They sheer luck what they did. Their house didn't burn. And that's the horrifying thing. So now, I mean, there's housewives, now everyone's kind of like romanticizing staying in a wildfire and defending. You know, I have a lot of, I call them Jack and Jill clients, people I'll never say their name. You know, but I have some, and they're just like, all, you know, I want to be here. I'm like, you know what? I'm like, listen, if I'll be here if it burns through this sector, I'll be here on the trucks, and you should go check in the Four Seasons somewhere, and I'll be in touch, you know. But some people just really want to, it's like this romantic fantasy, how they're going to stand and defend. And not everyone is physically and psychologically tough enough and driven enough. And, you know, it's going to be really scary. So that's my biggest fear. It's probably LA County's biggest fear, is the next big fire comes through and you have a lot of people still with, you know, zero knowledge, zero training, zero skills, zero infrastructure. That, you know, we have one canyon in Malibu, and, you know, their big plan, everyone's been putting these little stand pipes on the municipal water supply. And, like, we don't do that, because your municipal water, it's, you know, people think the water gets shut off. Doesn't get shut off. Up in the hills, the tanks are the water's pumped up to these tanks up in the mountains, and it's pumped from like Pacific Coast Highway. So in Malibu, for instance, the first thing you lose in any wildfire is power. and the fire can be miles away. You'll have no power. So your power goes down, all your communication goes down. So all of our, we're fed, our power lines, our communication lines are all on poles. We're not undergrounded. So you lose power. You lose internet, you lose cellular, you lose everything. So there's a lot of people planning on using their fire hydrants or their little mini fire hydrants hooked up to their water main. So what happens in a fire is the power goes down. So there's X amount of water in this giant tank on the mountain. So everyone's using that water now. Everyone's got their little things. People turn their sprinklers on and leave. So everyone just starts using water like you'd never use your water. Now, when a home burns to the ground, homes start burning. All the pipes obviously burn and melt. So the PVC pipe, the PEX pipe they use now, even copper pipe, your home burns to the ground, I see lots of water. And most of the water I see is rolling down the street because it's just pouring out of pipes. Like our homes weren't built, our water systems weren't built for everyone's house to be flowing more water than it would flow running every appliance. And that's what happens when your water main goes. So as that water is depleted in the tank, all of a sudden there's no water. There's no water. So like if your plan is, you know, you're going to use the water. It's like, you know, Topanga I talked about before. Topanga has crazy water pressure. I mean, crazy water pressure. The mains in front of the houses, 250, 275, you know, pounds per square inch, like horrifying the amount of pressure. So there's a lot of people, they're planning on using the hydrants. But yeah, when you're the only person in that whole canyon on a Sunday hooked up to that hydrant, testing it, it's great. It's great. Now, cut to real deal. Homes have burned to the ground. Hundreds and hundreds of people are out there hooked on the hydrant. Everyone turned their sprinklers on. The fire department's doing what they can, hooked to the hydrants. The tanks go down. There's no water. So if like that's your plan really sucks. You know? So yeah. Well, so you know, we don't.
That's a scary preview.
No, it's really scary. And it's even scarier is everyone now, like after the Woolsey fire, especially people hear fire in Malibu homes burn. So the entrepreneurs out there throughout the country, the little light bulb goes off in their head and they're like, ooh, how do I make money off of this? So now there's this whole new industry has spurred of wildfire defense systems. So, and it's really sad in a way. There's a number of companies selling basically Home Depot sprinklers, because that's where they get them, and Home Depot sprinklers on the roof of your house. And like some of the systems, I'm not going to name the companies, but their water supply is your municipal water. And so basically they do, and you won't believe what these things cost is just utterly insane. So, you know, they basically put some sprinklers on your roof. It's very, very low flow. It looks like a bunch of little boys taking a tinkle on your roof when these sprinklers turn on. And they, you know, some of them have their, you know, everyone now wants an app for everything. So, you know, your refrigerator comes with an app, your coffee, everything has an app these days. So a lot of these people are like really tech heavy. And the one thing that doesn't work in fires is the tech. So, you know, they'll say, oh, evacuate. You can activate your system from any smart device from anywhere in the world. Well, no, you can't. Because there's no comms in a fire if you live in a true wildfire area like Malibu. So, and then what's horrifying is, for instance, you know, you're looking for one of these Home Depot sprinkler system with your little app, you're looking at like $70,000 plus, which to me is just insane. It's like thievery. And I kind of think it's fine. I get calls all the time. Hey, can you put sprinklers on my roof? And my first question is, what are you growing on your roof that you needed irrigated? You know, because basically with building codes and everything else, I mean, all roofs now are like class A roofs. So class A roof can handle burning debris on it for like an hour at least. So what are you trying to like clean your gutters, clean your roof, clean your solar panels? Like, you know, so we do some rain guns high on roofs, but to us, it's not about the roof. It's about getting that water flow over the trees, projecting it further on the property. You know, it's like the big guns you saw, some of those at Calamigos Ranch. They weren't on the roof because I wanted the roof wet. They were on the roof to get over those like 80-foot tall trees and to really make it rain, you know, and really project the water far out. So, yeah, so unfortunately now there's a number of companies and some of them think they have the answer to the municipal water problem. They think they can suck the water out of the line. Like you don't need to have pressure because our system will do it. They know nothing about engineering and math or moving water, and it's tremendously expensive for like the type of money they're charging. They're, you know, just tremendously, tremendously expensive.
Well, disasters always bring out the lowlifes and the people that want to profit off of people. So, Bobby, how can people get in touch with you?
That's a hard one because we're really busy. our website's really just a landing page. I don't know if it's up now. We totally don't care. I believe the number's listed. You can find it. You're going to have to leave a message. We rarely answer the phone. Send an email.
But you did give me an Instagram link so people can follow you on Instagram.
We just put some visuals up there because we wanted to see, like I said, these companies are marketing really, really silly things, really silly flows. None of them are from the Santa Monica Mountains. None of them live here. Some of these companies spurned after the Woolsey fire. So, you know, if you want to see what like a real wildfire sprinkler system does, we threw some visuals out there because, you know, Santa Ana winds, you need to move big water at big pressure. And it's really about strategy. We have many homes where the home's hardened. We're trying to save all the fuels on the property so the fuels don't light the house on. I mean, a hardened home is not going to light from an ember. If you can prevent the fuels around the house from igniting, then it's not going to ignite from flame impingement from any of the trees around it. So our Instagram, private message me, I'll get back to you. Leave a message, our number. I don't even know if our website's up right now. So don't even care. You know, it's like, yeah, I always laugh. We get mailers all the time. I live in Malibu. So these mailers come through, you know, all these companies. And I'm telling you, if you're getting information from a mailer, companies that are busy, don't send out mailers. You know, companies that make really good products, like you never get a mailer from Ferrari, from Tesla. You know, you never get some mass marketing from, you know, from any legit company that's good at what they do, busy, they just can't, you know, we're trying to scale accordingly. But, you know, more horrifying than fires in Southern California is trying to run a small business. Way more horrifying than dealing with fire.
Well, we need to find a way to clone you. But as usual, a ton of great information. And people can always watch The Last House Standing and see what you do or listen to this podcast because you do have a lot of great advice. Bobby, thank you so much for coming on today.
Great seeing you, George. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for joining me today on the Tell Us How to Make It Better podcast. If you enjoyed what you were listening to, please become a subscriber. That way you don't miss an episode. I have a new one that comes out every Tuesday. There's also a contact form in the show notes. Now, if you've had a good or bad building experience, just an interesting story about your house, fill out the form and let me know about it. Who knows? You might be featured in an upcoming episode of the podcast. And I've also included a link to my documentary film, The Last House Standing, and I've given you a passcode to watch the film for free. My way of saying thanks for stopping by today. I hope you'll check out the film, and I'd love to hear what you think about it. Thanks again for listening. See you next time.